Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi there, everybody, and thanks for listening to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
The times, they are a-changin'.
Okay. Anything in particular that made you say that?
Just kind of a social change thing.
I see what you're getting at.
Chris and I decided that we wanted to talk about something that the two of us are very interested in. I've written about this quite a bit in the blogs. Blogs.howstuffworks.com. And it's something that I continue to really be interested in. And it's the whole concept of social networking and social change.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because increasingly we're seeing social networking becoming an important part of social activities throughout the population, especially in the Western world. Over in Asia, it's a little harder for us to tell just because, you know, we don't have that experience. But we see a lot of people using sites like Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, Orkut, even that kind of stuff to sort of keep touch with friends, pass information along, make recommendations to one another, even share links. Like, we're starting to see social networking become just as important in a way as search engines.
Yeah.
People are discovering content by seeing what their friends suggest.
And I know this might actually surprise some people because a lot of people, for example, with Twitter, when it first came out, the question on the homepage was, you know,
what are you doing?
And people say, well, I don't really want to visit a site in which I have to read about everyone going to the bathroom and making a sandwich.
Finding the remote, looking for their shoes.
I am tying my shoe.
Duct taping the Jack Russell Terrier to the wall. It gets kind of slow on the weekends is all I'm saying.
Oh, okay. But the thing is, I mean, and when I wrote that post about Facebook Lite on the blogs, blogs.howstuffworks.com, you know, we got a lot of feedback from people who didn't like it because they couldn't get to their applications. They wanted to play Lexulus. They wanted to, you know, get into Farmville and they do all this stuff. And they couldn't, and you can't do that on Facebook
Lite. Right, right. Because Facebook Lite is a stripped down version of the site where you're just getting essentially status updates.
So, you know, you might be thinking, well, these sites are really just for play. And a lot of people do use them for that. But they also enable a kind of communication in a broader forum that also makes it possible to do things like, you know, organize, even for fun, organize a flash mob.
Yep.
You know, and
yeah, you might just want to get a group together to do a goofy little fake pillow fight in the middle of downtown New York or something.
Yeah. Or organize a tweet up and say, you know, hey, I'm at Joe's Bar down on 14th Street and have random people who happen to be in the area drop in and go, hey, you know.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you. I'm Twitter. You know, this is me.
But you can also utilize these same social networking tools to try and affect a change where you're trying to either get a message across so that you're trying to raise awareness, or you're actually trying to change something specifically. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to kind of talk about how people have used social networking to attempt this and whether or not it's been successful. And I would argue that in large part, actually making a change has not been that successful through social networking, but that's mainly because I don't know that anyone has necessarily figured out the best way of doing it yet.
Everybody does it a little bit differently. Last year, I wrote a blog post about Moldova because some people were trying to hold a protest and the mm-hmm. government was, let's just say, not too thrilled about it. And then it was a little violent, as I remember, but, you know, not like the Iran situation, which we'll mention in a moment.
Yep.
But people were using their Twitter and Facebook statuses to indicate where they should meet. And it's very difficult for those who are not tuned in, if the authorities are not paying attention to it, it is very difficult for them to figure out how hundreds of people are leaving the scene before they can get there. And reassembling at another location, which has been organized, you know, using these networks.
Right.
And I mean, it could also be done over SMS, text messaging over your phone.
Which is, you know, that's essentially what Twitter is built on top of. But yes, you could do it on a much more a scaled down version where you just take Twitter out of the equation entirely. And in some cases, that's actually a good idea, because if you have left your Twitter account public, then anyone could see what you are updating just by following the public timeline, even if they're not following you specifically. And before long, people in charge may actually, or the people who oppose whatever your position is, could end up keeping up with you and every move you make, and because you're essentially broadcasting it. And if they're able to keep up with it, then they're able to possibly negate whatever move you want to make, and then you're back to square one. So, yeah, there's some downfalls to this kind of approach of using social networking to organize protests, which we really saw in Iran.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things, before we get to that, one of the things that makes this possible is, and this is not even a Twitter adaptation, this is something that other people came up with, is the use of the hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, well, if thousands of people are posting Twitter messages, how, you know, in the public timeline, how am I supposed to figure out what's going on in, you know, this particular situation? Well, people have taken to using hashtags, which is using the pound sign, the number sign, or the octothorpe, as I like to use it.
Right.
You know, establishing a particular tag so that everybody is putting that particular string of text in their Twitter messages.
It makes it much easier to search.
Yes, and most Twitter programs that I've seen lately, third-party programs, allow you to track those trending topics.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see if a lot of people are mentioning, including this tag, then it is very easy to identify what's going on with a particular social situation, and you can follow it very, very easily.
And another thing that people have been doing, which is one of those gestures that you can very quickly identify as, okay, something's going on because everyone seems to be doing this, would be changing your avatar.
Yes.
On Twitter, this mm-hmm. became – there are two instances I can think of on Twitter where this really kind of swept across the service, at least the people I follow. One was the blackout in response to Australia's policy to filter the internet. Now, in this case, Australia was talking about creating a law that would allow the government to tell internet service providers what they can and can't let through the country. And it was getting to a level of censorship and information control that a lot of people were not very comfortable with. Internet service providers, they weren't very comfortable with it. I mean, these are private companies that are being told by the government what they can and can't do as far as their main business. And as a response, in order to raise awareness, people began to turn their Twitter avatars into just a black square. And, you know, at first that just got a little bit of attention, but then some pretty high ranking as far as followers go, Twitter members began to do this, like Stephen Fry, who has hundreds of thousands of people following him. He blacked out his avatar and then left a message about what was going on. And then you started seeing black avatars pop up all over the place, just black boxes. And that's all that was there was to it. And then usually there'd be a link somewhere like, why is my avatar like this? Read this. And it would link to an article about the situation. As a result, the whole policy got a lot of attention directed toward it. And they ended up delaying that decision. The last I had heard, that decision actually did go through, but it went through ages after the first discussion. So it was something where the reaction did kind of cause some change, but it was more of a delay than anything else. But the other case where people changed their avatar that was very they ended up making the news. It was more than just something that happened on Twitter. Was the Iranian election and the fallout that followed it. You began to see people change their avatars where they would give them all a green tint.
Yes, some people would replace their avatar with a simple green square, as in the case of the blackout. But others were I think most people were tinting their avatars,
filter,
which is what I saw the most frequently. And the idea, and they were also going in to change their settings to the time zone where Tehran is located, which is the capital of Iran. And the idea was twofold, really, to show support for the Iranian protesters, but also to theoretically confuse the government using the hashtag and the time zone to make it appear as though there were more people involved than actually were, and to maybe mask the identities of those who were involved. At least that was the justification that I was reading about. And many people are still have not changed their avatars back to their original state, even though those revolts were taking place last summer.
Yeah, this was back in July, right?
Yeah, mid 2009, depending on people listen way after the fact. So,
this was one of those things where it definitely helped raise awareness very quickly. And some people were using Twitter and Facebook to try and organize meetups. But then quickly there was a message that went around saying, you know, you probably shouldn't publish this stuff because then it just gives the information to the Iranian government, which was monitoring both Facebook and Twitter as much as it could to try and determine what protesters were up to and what their plans were so that they could have a response unit in place to take care of that without it getting out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And there were also reports, I don't know if they were ever substantiated, but there were reports that the Iranian government was actually publishing its own tweets as if they were coming from protesters to try and spread misinformation, confuse matters, to kind of take some of the steam out of the movement so that it wouldn't be as effective. And that's one of the big issues about social networking is that when it gets into something like this, when it's really highly politicized, it's hard to tell if the information you're receiving is genuine or not without it linking to some other objective source that you know for a fact has got really good fact-checking, really strong editorial voice. Without that kind of link back to something that you can rely upon, you have to worry that maybe whatever it is you're reading isn't completely genuine. And, I mean, that's the case with anything you see on any social networking site, but in particular when it's talking about something like trying to make a big change.
Well, I think speaking of change, we should talk about the social media event that's going on right now as we are recording that, because this is another particularly positive way I think that social media is maybe drawing attention to and helping organize efforts to help the people in Haiti. Just a few days before we recorded this podcast, there was a magnitude 7 earthquake that killed thousands and thousands of people and
injured thousands more.
Infrastructure
in Haiti is in ruins right now.
Yeah. And it's actually only a couple days after that as we are recording this. So as of January 14th, this is an amazing thing. The American Red Cross was able to report that it had raised $4.7 million simply from people who were text messaging. And you might say, well, how are they doing that? Well, there's a company called MGive. The president, Tony Aiello, was actually talking to Laura Seidel on NPR as I was driving home yesterday. I listened to their his explanation of things. This is a pretty neat deal. You get a code, a text messaging code, five-digit number, and you send a short message to that number. And basically what happens is MGive works with the phone company, your cell phone provider, and the nonprofit organization, in this case, the American Red Cross, or there are a couple others. Wyclef Jean has one.
Yep.
What happens is if you send a text message to that number with the pre-organized message, they will take a $10 donation and debit that to your cell phone account.
That's in the case of the Red Cross one. I think Wyclef Jean's it's $5.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the same concept. So
true.
It's whatever they've agreed to. I mean, it tends to be around the $5 to $10 mark because that's an amount that most people are comfortable giving. You ask for more than that and it gets a little more complex. Although the Red Cross one allows you to give up to 3 times using that number.
Oh, okay.
So okay. You could give, $30 if you wanted to using that. And of course this doesn't prevent you from donating in other ways as well. It's just one of those things that makes it very, very easy to react in a very timely manner without it taking a lot of time or effort on your part. I know it sounds kind of callous, but I really do believe that the easier you make it to donate to a cause, the more people will donate. As soon as you start putting barriers in there where, as soon as you get home, call this number, or as soon as you get home, log into this website. Mm-hmm. Once you start putting that time difference in there from the moment when someone hears about something to the moment when someone can do something about it,
right,
you cut down on participation.
Well, this is exactly what Mr. Aiello was saying, that it's just making it very, very simple. And they had interviews with a couple people who had been making donations. One guy they talked to had received a message on his cell phone and said, well, you know, this is so easy. I'm just going to reply right away and do this. Mm-hmm. And it was just very, very simple, very, very easy. The $10 amount, Mr. Aiello said, is a very it's the same kind of thing. $10 doesn't really seem like all that much.
Right.
But it makes a difference for people who might not have otherwise donated.
When you
it's
get
very
to
simple,
$4.7 million, that's – I mean, because, yeah, $10 is not a lot for any individual. But when you get such an effective campaign together, mm-hmm. Collectively, that does become a pretty large sum of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Carrie Hausman, who is a spokesperson for the American Red Cross, said that based on how effective this is, she expects that this is going to make real lasting change in the way that they are able to raise money in the wake of a tragedy like this, because it's just so simple that it happened.
I'm hoping that this does – I hope that's the case. I hope it's not the opposite where it becomes like a unique event where people do this because it makes them feel good. And then the next time something happens, they say, well, I don't need to donate to that because I donated back after the earthquake in Haiti. So why would I – I don't need to donate again. Hopefully that won't happen, especially because, like you were saying, I mean, it makes it so much easier. It removes those barriers. It's not asking for a lot of money. And in many cases, this money is, it's going to causes that are vital for people's survival. So,
mm-hmm. Well, there is such a thing as donor fatigue.
Yes.
But, no, I think, and of course, MGive did not pop up mysteriously overnight after the Haiti disaster. So this is something that has been going on for some time, and this just puts it in the spotlight. But there are other ways in which social media has helped. Having the meme spread through Facebook and having a link say, you know, it explains, here's what's going on. You can donate to CARE or the American Red Cross, right, or one of many other organizations. Just click here and it takes you right to the page. It's right there in your live feed. It makes it so much easier to identify and share with other people.
Same thing with Twitter. I mean, Twitter really helped broadcast the whole text message thing quite a bit. Because, I mean, if we're just talking about text messaging, we're not really talking about social media right there or social networking, beyond networking with your immediate social circle. But there were so many people who were talking about it on Twitter that it was trending then. Right. And that helped quite a bit too. I'm sure that really gave a boost to the submissions of the $10 donations.
Well, actually getting back to how easy this is, but back to a point that you made earlier, Caroline McCarthy at CNET has also written an article in which she had talked to the marketing director for Charity Navigator, which is a website that basically evaluates nonprofit organizations and non-governmental organizations, based on where's the money going? Can you count on it actually being used to help the people in whatever situation you want to help them
in? How much of it is going toward administrative costs?
Yeah.
How reputable is this charity?
Yeah.
Very important questions to ask.
And it's a very neat site. But the director, marketing director, Sandra Minuti, said that 4,000 bogus donation sites were set up after Hurricane Katrina.
Right.
It's very important to make sure that where you're making your donation, is actually ending up where you think it is going. And it's very easy with things like URL shorteners and, five-digit codes that you would text message to make sure that you are getting it from a reputable source and that you're actually making a donation at the site you think you're doing that. Because,
right,
it is very easy for a scammer to set up a site to try to fool people. And you can bet that they will do that in this case as well.
On a related note, I noticed already that there are Facebook groups popping up where it's saying things like, if 1 million people join this group, I will donate $1 per person to Haiti or whatever.
Right.
A lot of those end up being bogus. It's just someone who's creating a group and wants to see if they can maybe actually get to 1 million people. Those are a lot harder to research than the charities because, often you don't have any real information about the people who started it. I would just recommend that maintain a healthy dose of skepticism whenever you encounter those kind of groups, especially if they want you to go to a different link, because that's a good chance that that's going to take you somewhere where there's some malware or a phishing scam or something like that. I always hesitate to join any sort of Facebook group, mainly for that reason. I would rather look into alternatives. It's not that I don't want to help. It's that I want to make sure that my help is going to the right place and that I'm not going to suffer for trying to help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So any group where you see, like, join this group and after we hit 1 million users, we get to, this much is going to be donated. Because honestly, why would someone put that kind of a requirement there?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that really ultimately heartless to say, I need 1 million people to join this group, and if 1 million people join, I'll donate this money. Why? Why not just donate the money now without 1 million people joining? What benefit is there to have 1 million people join the group? I mean, there's no reason for it. So once you start asking those questions, critical thinking is so important on the internet, folks, and especially when you're talking about things about trying to make a social change, because everyone wants the world to be a better place, and we all want to feel like we've contributed to that, but let's make sure that we're really contributing to that. We're not just fooling ourselves. I don't know if you wanted to mention anything more before I moved on, but there was one other kind of related thing to this that I was going to go off on.
Well, I was going to mention that Caroline McCarthy said that if you receive an email from someone claiming that they are a victim, that's also sort of a red flag.
Yeah.
My house got destroyed in this problem.
Yeah, it's essentially a twist on the Nigerian scam.
Yeah, it really is.
And which has been around forever. I mean, that was fax stuff before it was email. So I wanted to mention another thing that happened recently on Facebook, mm-hmm. which drives me crazy.
Uh-oh.
Which is the Facebook bra color deal.
Okay.
So if you were on Facebook and you're a guy and you noticed that all your female friends were posting colors and you were wondering why and you never found out, it was kind of this playful way of raising awareness for breast cancer research. Mm-hmm. Women were posting the color of the bra they were wearing as their status. So you might see one that says blue or black or white lace or something like that. And then eventually you start to put it together and you're like, oh, that's odd. And there was no explanation at the time why they were posting these colors. Now, that's problem number one. If you don't explain why you're doing something, how can you raise awareness? Okay, problem number one, if there is no explanation, you are not raising awareness. All you're doing is being kind of flirtatious by saying, ooh, look at the color of my underthings that you cannot see. They are actually black and blue. Doesn't make a damn bit of difference, people. Part two, breast cancer. We're pretty much aware of it. Turns out everyone has heard of this. Breast cancer awareness is probably a non-issue. What's at issue is research money and, funding for finding a cure, prevention, that kind of stuff. That's still extremely important. Not so much important about the awareness. The little pink ribbon, not doing as much as you think it is. And donating money to services that actually are trying to cure the disease, that is where the action is needed. And this goes for beyond the web. We actually had someone come in and talk to us about breast cancer here at HowStuffWorks.com, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And she pointed out that the whole pink movement is both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that it's a great marketing PR thing where everyone's really aware of it, but it's a curse in the sense that there are a lot of companies that come out that try to take advantage of people by selling these pink items, saying it's for breast cancer research, and donating very little or no money at all to actual research, and either keeping most or all of the profits for themselves. It's the same sort of thing about these little Facebook gestures. They don't ultimately do anything other than have, people be a little playful about what color their underwear is. It upsets me because the effort that people are putting toward being silly and mysterious and flirtatious could be put toward actually doing something actionable that makes a difference. And if you leave Facebook thinking that you made a difference by posting the color of your underwear, it's kind of a disservice to the people who are actually struggling with breast cancer. You could instead do something real to help these people. So, okay, I think I'm done ranting now.
Okay.
That was obviously something I feel strongly about.
Apparently.
Gonna take a breath.
Okay.
Think about pie. And now, I wanted to mention also Anonymous.
Anonymous.
Which has used social networking to get its own message across, mostly through YouTube, mm-hmm. which is, in a way, a kind of social networking site.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Not quite the same as Twitter and Facebook. But they've also used other social networking to arrange meetings to do things like protest Scientology,
mm-hmm.
The Church of Scientology's practices, I should say, not the religion itself. That's what they try and make clear anyway in their videos.
Right.
But they also tend to use wikis a lot, which is kind of outside of social networking. But they use a combination of those things in order to organize and take action as they see fit. So social networking, we are starting to see it play a larger role within trying to make a difference in the world. And in some cases, like when we were talking about Haiti, it's helping, but it's mostly, in that case, directing action toward a different link or a different method mm-hmm. to donate money or whatever. We're not really seeing it to the point yet where social networking itself is making the huge change. But I think that's going to, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this year, 2010, if we didn't see an incident that was greatly impacted and possibly dependent upon social networking.
Perhaps. It'll be interesting. I shudder to think what kinds of events, because it seems like they're always
good or bad.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of these the ones that we've talked about have their roots in some event that is very, very serious in nature. So hopefully,
sure,
it'll be something really positive and happy.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that yes, the event is probably very serious in nature, but the response to the event is often very inspiring.
I agree.
I hate to see that. a tragic event become a necessity in order before you see an inspiring response. I mean, yes, I agree with you there, but I'm thankful that there are people who still respond with such compassion and speed to these events. That actually is very encouraging for someone who, you know, as they get older, gets a little more cynical.
I hadn't noticed.
It's nice to be proven wrong once in a while.
I hadn't noticed.
You hadn't? Okay, well, if any of you have noticed, you can write me. Actually, you'll write both of us. The email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. We'll talk to you again, possibly through social networking, really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.